Thank you. I'm glad you came tonight. And it's a good night to come because my intent is to begin in a really simple way. There's a saying that the Dharma, the path, is good at the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, because it keeps coming down to what's really a basic and profound teaching of how to really be present. You know, how to really be awake in our hearts. And so I want to just start with that this season in as simple a way as I can. Just to share with you, I was in August, I went out to a retreat in Colorado with a Tibetan teacher who I've gone and studied with a number of times. Very powerful kind of teaching of really resting in awareness. And again, as I always am at retreats, I got really moved by how necessary and precious it is to pause, to not be seduced into all the habitual activities that keep reminding us of who we are and what's wrong and what needs to happen. To really pause and make space for the life that's here. Really touched by how when we pause, it's possible to reconnect in a powerful way. And I'm very aware that it's like school starting. You know, even if we work through the summer, there's something about fall in our collective psyches that things amp up. I mean, how many of you were in Staples in the last couple of weeks? School-age kids. But it just felt to me like if there was anything I wanted to explore tonight, it's how when things amp up, when it starts getting busy, which for some of us is all the time, we can deepen our commitment to stopping and coming home again. And I do think it takes stopping. And it's very hard, as we'll explore. This is one of my favorite little quotes from Thomas Merton. He says, "There is a pervasive form of contemporary violence, and that is activism and overwork. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of its innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone and everything, is to succumb to violence. The frenzy of this kind of activism, this overwork, neutralizes our work for peace. It destroys our own inner capacity for peace. It destroys the fruitfulness of our own work because it kills the root of inner wisdom which makes work fruitful." That's pretty uncompromising language, eh? That work, this overwork, this isn't about being engaged or active. This is our busyness that actually disconnects us from our heart and soul. Many of you have heard me share that in the Chinese script that the words for the symbols for busy is very similar to the words heart killing. And I reflect on that a lot because I can watch, and I watch this more and more, day by day, it's like I'm monitoring that when I'm speedy, when I'm in that trying to get something done mode and kind of caught in that, there's not as much tenderness. I can't listen so well. There's not a resonance in me. When I hear about suffering, it's like conceptually it brings up compassion, but not the kind of what they call the quivering of the heart. So busyness really tightens up our heart. So what I'd like to explore is how meditation begins with what I've termed the sacred art of pausing. And that what I mean by pausing is having the capacity to stop that busyness, always being goal-oriented toward that we're doing this for that. We're on our way to something else. That pausing means to let go of our inner dialogue, that incessant commentary, and arrive again. That we could describe pausing in terms of formal meditation, like we just paused together. And it felt so good. It doesn't even matter the content of what happens when we pause. There is a power in just intending to stop. So we can pause formally, but we can also pause informally. And I really want to invite you to explore. It's like one of my friends says that we can do shorties, not prolongies, in terms of meditation. You know, we can do mini pauses, and there's a real amazing kind of mystery that opens up in the midst of our life if we keep stopping. So the most well-known motif in the Buddhist tradition, I suspect most of you know the story of the Buddha's awakening, that he busied himself with all sorts of austerities, all sorts of practices to try to discover liberation. But his true freedom came when he decided to pause under the Bodhi tree, which is the tree of awakening. And it was a very intentional pause. He was absolutely committed to not continuing in that trance of do something else, try this, be that, just stopping. It was like unilaterally stopping. He stopped under the Bodhi tree. He stopped the strivings, the grasping, the resisting. He just committed himself to full presence. So that's really what we do here when we come. We're really pausing together. And just to say that the pausing of meditation, the putting down of going for something, does not connote passivity. In fact, it's by pausing, by learning to stop and reconnect with what we cherish, reconnect with a sense of open-heartedness, reconnect with a clarity, that we then move into action informed by that. It's the path of compassionate action to pause. I was very moved when I heard the story of Gandhi, who said that he, in addition to his regular meditation and practices, that he took a day off each week, and he said, I stop to pray and meditate so I can make sure that my actions are coming from the deepest part of my being. So to begin with, if you really are looking at, well, every one of us here, every one of us is on a spiritual path. And by that I mean we each, in our depth, want to be fully who we can be. We want to be awake. We want to love well. And that it's that longing to be fully who we are that motivates us to stop, to not stay on that treadmill, to not keep on tumbling into the future. So meditation begins with a willingness, and a courageous willingness, I want to say, to stop doing, to pause. And it's not easy because the trance of doing is very compelling. I mean, does anyone here not know that sense of just having our lives tumbling into the future, like just kind of in some way noticing that we're on our way somewhere? The more stress, the speedier we get. We speed up. So in this culture, it's very much, it's almost like praised that, you know, how much can you do? And the engine just keeps on going to be productive, to improve, to prove ourselves, to in some way get somewhere. And there's a running away. And I think that the questions, what am I running from right now? or what am I trying to get, are really powerful if we want to interrupt that conditioning. Some of you might remember, it's so interesting to me. The Buddha basically described two flavors of the trance we're in, where we're always on our way. And one flavor he described of, they're both forms of clinging, but one flavor is that we're running away from what we don't like. This is aversion. Like in some way there's some unpleasantness, there's some unfamiliarity, there's some angst, and we're trying to get away from that, so we keep busy. We don't pause. The other flavor of trance, we want more. There's something missing. Investigate this in any moment. There's usually either a sense something's wrong or something's missing. Another way to say it is, how many moments do we really feel like totally enough? Like really we can arrive, unconditionally arrive. Like this moment's a good moment to die kind of feeling, you know? We don't. We usually are in the trance of something's missing or something's wrong. So just to take them one at a time, the fear-based one, the something's wrong, often goes, something's wrong with me. And I talk about this a lot, and those of you that are new, you'll hear it more and more, because I think it's the most pervasive suffering in our culture. That we have underneath our actions and our behaviors and our feelings and our conscious cognitions is an assumption. I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. Something's wrong with me. You know, somebody sent me recently this picture of this man that had just arrived in heaven, and he's a new arrival, and God's talking to him, and God is responding to his questions. And then finally God says, no, that's not a sin either. My goodness, you must have worried yourself to death. You know? How much do we worry about, I'm not going to be good enough, I'm doing it wrong? I think it pulls people from meditation, because people come to meditation with an idea of what good meditation is. And inevitably, it never matches our idea of good meditation. So we start getting this discouraged sense of, I'm not cut out for this. So one of them is we leave home by judging ourselves. We also do it by judging others. The something's wrong becomes a filter. It's like our minds, out of their anxiety, are looking for where there's something wrong. So you might even look back on today and how much judging was there? How much blaming? How many moments were we with someone and there was a complete openness to who that being was versus some filter of what's wrong or how I'm not completely showing up in this interaction or that this is getting in the way of something else? We usually have that filter. We have, as part of this, this trance, these standards or ideas of how reality is supposed to be. How I'm supposed to feel right now, how you're supposed to act or dress or treat me or whatever. There was another kind of cartoon, and it had this young boy and his mother in the car, and in the car in front of them, this woman stands up and she's completely nude. So, you know, and so the little boy said, Mama, that lady's not wearing her seatbelt. You know, it's like we each have our own set of standards, but it's like. So the point of this, of these two flavors of the trance, the reason I'm going over this with you, is that because of thinking something's wrong or something's missing, we don't stop. We leave the present moment. And if you ever wondered why we give these simple instructions here, okay, just relax. You know, just be here with the breath. It's not like so easy, because our whole system is geared to seek stimulation, to follow our thoughts, to think it's not okay to just feel what's right here. we're constantly leaving. Perhaps one of the most pervasive things the Buddha described is a sense of trying to hold on to getting more, like just not being satisfied. And Ajahn Shanti, who taught here last year, describes it this way, is that we usually have a demand on the moment. It's like right now we have a demand on how this should be. Rather than this kind of openness, there's an expectation or demand of how it's supposed to be. And in any moment that we're seeking things to be different, it's as Thich Nhat Hanh says, we miss our appointment with life. And the despair that I run into in people on the path is a sense of racing to the finish line and not really living this. Like, we're so used to being on our way somewhere that there's a feeling that, well, my life doesn't feel really vibrant and open and alive. We're missing our appointment. We're missing out in some way. And that's where the grief comes, by the way. Our grief is that we're losing life moments because we're so busy on our way somewhere else. I'd like to read you a poem from Zen Master Ryokan. He writes, "Without desire, everything is sufficient. With seeking, myriad things are impoverished. Plain vegetables can soothe hunger. A patched robe is enough to cover this bent old body. Alone I hike with a deer. Cheerfully I sing with village children. The stream under the cliff cleanses my ears. The pine on the mountaintop fits my heart. Cheerfully I sing with the village children. The stream under the cliff cleanses my ears. The pine on the mountaintop fits my heart." So I chose that poem because I think there's something in all of us that longs for that kind of simplicity, where there's a quality of contentedness and openness that right now really is full, that the mystery and beauty and sadness, it's all that there's room for it, and that we're here with it, rather than being addicted to having life be different. That is what the Buddha taught was the essence of suffering. This addiction to having it be different. So what if we could pause and come home to how it is right now with real openness and real wakefulness? Let's just to explore that. So, and when I say that, I'm going to ask you to... You guys are so well trained. we are going to practice different pieces. What I'd like to do with the rest of the evening is explore what are the components of pausing and meditating. Like, what are we training ourselves in so that we're not always running from the moment? We're not always seeking something different. And the first component I call preparing the garden, which is, as you noticed in the instructions, we begin almost every set of instructions, and this happens at retreats too, with a kind of concentrative practice, which means we establish some home base. Because our minds are all over the place, some home base so we can come back from the busyness of thought and begin to get the knack of re-arriving again and again. Begin to quiet the mind. Now, just to say that most schools of meditation have some training in what's called concentration. It's also called shamatha, which has to do with tranquility or calming. And the reason is that if we just said, okay, let's be present with what's right here, what would happen? The mind would go chasing off, right? Over and over and again. So there's some training in how to just quiet that some. It doesn't mean that we're trying to vanquish thoughts. We're not trying to get rid of thoughts. We're just getting the knack of noticing when we've been off on thought trains and coming back, so that we're not quite as lost in the stories. So there's a little more space and capacity to notice what's here. I'd like to just mention that the inner dialogue we have that is incessant is what keeps retelling us who we are. And that for most of us, our inner dialogue is got the content that says what's wrong and what's missing. Our inner dialogue keeps us tense. And when we begin to quiet the mind, it's actually that the body follows suit. We get to discover a sense of beingness that is not limited by our habitual story. It's really the pathway to awakening, or sets that in motion. When the inner dialogue stops, our life changes, because our life is only how it is because we keep repeatedly telling ourselves who we are. So quieting the mind, really powerful with these. Now the challenge is that we try to control our lives by our thoughts. You know, if I judge myself, then I'll get better. If I judge that person, I can prove to myself that I'm one up. Not forgiving. It's a way of controlling. If I forgive, then I'll get hurt. So it's like this is a training in really letting go of our thoughts and ideas so we can, with honesty, connect with how it is right now. This is what Annie Lamott says about letting go. Because this is really a training in letting go of thoughts. I know that I need to let go, she says. I know I need to let go or I'm going to be dragged. She says, letting go is definitely not my strong suit. Neither is forgiveness. In fact, they're the two things I'm worst at. Why couldn't God's answer be, why don't you obsess endlessly about this? And then try to control this situation into a fare-thee-well. And be sure not to breathe at all. And try to manipulate everyone into doing things your way. And then stomp away and brood for a while. And then eat a big bag of Hershey's Kisses. So it's like these are the false refuges. You know, I talk about false refuges. Like instead of coming out of our thoughts and being here, it's like I'm going to keep judging. I'm going to keep not forgiving. And I'm going to brood. And I'm going to eat the Hershey's Kisses. So, again, it's not about getting rid of thoughts, but the first part of our practice is, can we have a little space so we're not so caught up in them? The breath is the most common anchor. So practice with the breath. It's a beautiful home base. Anywhere we go, the breath is happening and it connects us with our body, with being here. So you can just have that simple intention as you go through the days. It's just to notice if you're getting caught in unproductive, spinning thoughts. Just come back. Come back. The training in quieting the mind can go very, very deep, this first piece. And we're going to be through this fall exploring how the different components of meditation work. It's going to be a very practice, hands-on kind of fall. I really want to deep. For those of you that really want to deepen your practice, I think you'll find it helpful. Different people find it valuable to spend different amounts of time on this first step of coming back to the breath, or it could be another anchor, but quieting the mind. For some people, just a little quieting, and there can be a real open sensory presence. For others, much more quiet and calm really helps in being able to see clearly. Srinarsargadatta describes the power when we go very deep into this quieting practice. It's like when the waves of the pool of the mind are really quieted, how deeply we can see. and how the heavens can be reflected on the surface. And he says this, he says, when the mind is momentarily free from its preoccupations, okay, not lost in thought, it becomes quiet. If you do not disturb this quiet and stay in it, just keep right here breathing, you find that the quiet is permeated with a light and a love you have never known, and yet you recognize it at once as your own nature. Once you have passed through this experience, you will never be the same person again. The unruly mind may break its peace and obliterate its vision, but it is bound to return, provided the effort is sustained. Until the day when all bonds are broken, delusions and attachments end, and life becomes supremely absorbed in the present. Just to take the pieces of this, when we're not preoccupied, the mind begins to quiet. When we deepen that quietness, there's a natural light and love that absolutely suffuses our awareness. And once we've started touching that, we begin to trust that as who we are. And so even though we get distracted again and get caught in our stories and we can suffer, there's some calling and some faith that keeps on bringing us home. So this is the power of just the first component that we're exploring tonight, which is concentration, coming back to the breath and quieting the mind. It's very, very basic and precious as a practice. So I'm calling it preparing the garden, because when we start to quiet, that's when we can practice full presence, which is the two wings of mindfulness and compassion. When we've quieted some, we can begin to see life as it is and hold it with kindness. Okay, so those are the next two pieces that I want to review. And this flowering of presence, the elements of mindfulness and compassion, will be the next steps over these next weeks. Next week will be really, how do you deepen that mindful presence with bodily phenomena, which is the first foundation. So the element of mindfulness, it's the question, what is happening right now? Mindfulness is that recognizing without any judgment that quality of being here. What's right here? With mindfulness, there's an openness to how it is. In other words, if there's any reaction, if there's like, I don't want to feel this, I shouldn't be feeling this, I should be feeling something else, we can't honestly recognize how it is right here. So it's without any interference, a full presence with how it is. So let's just take, we'll take our first, you know, this next pause together. Let's just explore the simplicity of quieting a little and just pure mindfulness. Because this is what it means to arrive in the pause. Mindfulness is arriving in the pause. So now as you're doing, just find your way of sitting. Just so you can deepen your attention with intention. And as this is like a mini meditation, again, feel your intention to have a pause right now that's filled with presence. A pause filled with presence. And if it helps to steady the mind, to arrive here, to quiet a little more, just take a moment to relax with the inflow and the outflow of the breath. Let this be your friend. Just the simplicity of breathing with awareness. The mindful presence is awake, so you're noticing what's happening, and open, really allowing. And you might just sense the mindfulness of sound to really establish that quality of wakefulness and openness. Just to listen. Can you listen and totally allow the sounds to be as they are? The close-in sounds, these words and the soft sounds in the room. And the more distant ones. Listening to the moment, the entire moment right now. Allowing it all, no resistance. And with that same allowing, knowing presence, listening to the sensations in the body, completely aware and letting be. Letting life live through you wakefully. This is mindfulness. Feeling the heart, feeling the emotions or moods that might be here. To recognize what it's like, the different moods or weather systems. And completely let be, allow. This is a mindful presence. If a thought comes, to be mindful of that. Thinking. Just relax open again. Let it come and let it go. So when we really begin to arrive in the garden, when we really begin to be a kind of living presence, there's a kind of mystery that arises. You know, when we've stepped out of our habitual stories about what's going on or about ourselves, there's just this changing flow of experience and this open, wakeful presence. The one who knows, as Ajahn Chah describes it, Thai teacher. And it radically shifts our sense of who we are. And this is the transformation that is really the crux of the Buddha's teachings. That in the moments that we're controlling our experience, that we're in that trance of I am a self on my way somewhere else, trying to get away from what's wrong, trying to get what's missing, in the moments that we stop, that we pause, we open out of that narrow identity and discover something very mysterious. We don't know exactly what we are, but there is a space of presence, of tenderness, that really is a kind of beingness that we cherish. And then we begin to see it in others. It comes from pausing. Now here's the challenge. It'd be nice if we could say, okay, we're all going to go home, we're going to pause, we're going to quiet our mind, and then just be open with what is and discover that openness is what we are. But what happens is exactly what happened to the Buddha when he did it under the Bodhi tree. We all have the same experience the Buddha had. What happened to him when he paused and committed himself to presence under the Bodhi tree? Anyone? Say it out loud.
Doubt.
Doubt. What else happened? What's that? Temptation, doubt, anything else? All the attacks of Mara. Like anything that you might consider difficult, anything that's painful, fear, anger, jealousy, aversion to physical experience, whatever it is, in the pause, that stuff can be there. Now, it might not be. You might experience the way I read in that reading, an incredible peace. But usually there's other layers that are in there. So part of our practice is having that courage to stay. That courage to stay. And this brings a second wing up. If mindfulness is to recognize what's going on, kind of an open presence, compassion gives us the space and tenderness and warmth to stay, to really be with the experience. When I was at retreat with Sokni Rinpoche, my Tibetan teacher, one of the questions asked is, but what about anger? Can you really hold the anger with compassion? And he said, yes, you can actually give it space. And then he went on to describe how anything that you give space to, giving space is giving love. If you are present and you give space to an emotion, that space is a heart space. You'll actually discover your heart in giving space. Space is love. So that's why we sometimes talk about in terms of saying yes, that our training is not only to recognize what's going on. Okay, I'm feeling, you know, emotional grip of anxiety, but to say yes, offering it space and presence, and discovering a real quality of compassion in that. One a yoga teacher described this kind of saying yes process. I loved the way she described it. She said, we have all these different experiences in us. And she said, you need to really give yourself love. And she suggested doing it by hugging ourselves. She said, just put your arms around yourself and just embrace yourself with love. And then she said, and then switch which arm is on top and embrace your evil twin. I thought that was great. We're embracing the whole deal. It's really giving space to the anger, giving space to the longing. To the extent that we resist, in other words, if there's some part of ourselves that we really think's not okay, that's where we end up contracting and suffering. To the extent that you can absolutely, without resistance, say yes to your experience moment to moment, in that yes is the space and tenderness of your true nature. We reconnect. So my example of these two wings is my own experience over the last month that I want to share as part of kind of wrapping this up. Because what we've done is we've talked about quieting the mind with concentration. We've talked about the wing of really recognizing, senses awake, what's happening. And then the wing of, can we be with this with kindness? And I went to a retreat that was a two-part retreat, total of maybe 15 days. And the first part of it, I had the experiences, a lot, some of what I read to you, where it got very, very quiet, very, very peaceful. There's a kind of luminosity and you know, feeling of just the beauty of life, really present. And it was... It was fun. I was really enjoying that. And then I had, due to a number of different conditions, including the altitude and including the fact that I have really very low blood pressure and a few other things, I fainted at right in the middle of the retreat. You know, like I left the room, but I fainted. And it was very dramatic because the woman, you know, heard me faint and started screeching, like really screaming in a way, like, you know, and everybody was silent in the room and they heard this like earth-shattering shriek. And so some people said that it brought them right to total, you know, enlightened freedom. It's like, stop their world. And other people were saying, what the hell, you know. Anyway, it was a big dramatic thing. And when I fainted, I kind of twisted my neck in a way that I didn't have. I must have compressed something in my neck, because for the days that followed, I was continuously dizzy and nauseous. And I thought I was going to faint all the time. And I had to come home early and get MRIs. It was just not what you'd expect. In retrospect, I felt like the first part of the retreat was that quieting. And then when I left, my real retreat began. Because I had an enforced kind of, when I got home these last few weeks, and I'm not done, you know, because I had then, that led to back spasms and so on. I've had a kind of longer vacation than I expected, because I had to cancel everything. But it was during these last weeks that I went from just that kind of mindfulness and quiet presence to almost being forced up against the wall to cultivate a tremendous kind of compassion. Because when it's really hard, when Mara is really there, and I'm not talking about like lightly, but like really there, like when we're dying and somebody we love is dying, or we're, for me, it's just been this very, it's been scary because I haven't exactly known what was going on and or how to take care of myself. When it gets hard, unless we open our hearts to how it is, you know, unless we do that, it's hellish. And if we do that, we actually discover a deeper freedom and a deeper peace and a deeper happiness than we do when we're just kind of riding the tides and it's good and it's easy conditions. It's like Mara, it's not like we're trying to get past Mara. It's that Mara's the given in each one of our existence. We're each in a body that's going to age, get sick and die. And we're each going to lose beings we love. And we're each living with tremendous uncertainty and in a world that is in sorry shape. That's Mara. And so it's not how to get past Mara. It's how, when these conditions arise, can we open our hearts to our life? That's the inquiry. So the practice of awakening compassion, in the most simple way, it's when you sit here and you feel restless, or you feel bored, or you feel really sleepy, like you're just kind of like, I'm not doing it right because I'm asleep. I'm missing out my one big sit of the week and I'm sleeping through it. Or maybe you're obsessing. Maybe your mind, and God, how mundane and trivial can a mind get, you know? Or maybe you're feeling a real angst. It's at those moments that the practice really, it's the rubber hits the road, that can you stay? Can you feel it directly, like really feel it, and offer a quality of space and care? That's the training. And as I mentioned, in upcoming weeks we're going to explore it more close in. But the invitation is to, when it gets difficult, stay. Breathe with what's here. I sometimes teach about, you know, putting your hand on your heart. Anything to communicate a quality of tender presence opens us from the oppressed self that's struggling to that space that is really loving presence. So just to review the components, and then we'll just close together, is to say that we quiet because no matter how much you want to be compassionate, if the mind is continually running the story of, oh my God, I'll never get well, or oh my God, this, or oh my God, that, there's no way to then get tender. We quiet some. We notice what's happening with mindfulness, and you can use noting, feeling it directly, and we offer care to the experience. Now, just to say that pausing is what enables us to begin to arrive in any of that. The commitment to pause by doing formal meditation, and through the day, because if it's just formal meditation, the rest of it's compartmentalized. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I know what it's like to sit, but it's like through the day, we're completely in the trance, and it's very, very thick. I mentioned that it's not a passive practice. It's actually very engaged. First, we engage with the reality of what's right here. And if we really can pause and be with what's here, we can bring a quality of presence, an incredibly healing, transforming presence to the beings in our life. That's where the true activism comes from. And maybe to say, just give you an example, is that when after I fainted, they called 911, and the nearest hospital was an hour and 15 minutes away. So I got to know the paramedic who was in the ambulance, who actually is a volunteer that runs the that coordinates the whole process. And she was a very, very meditative person, and she told me that she does this because there's nothing she loves more than holding a space for people when they're in one of those real crisis situations. And she told me about, you know, just the month earlier, a couple where the woman got hit by lightning and killed when she was in the mountains, and her husband was with her, and being with them both in the ambulance. And what was so astonishing about her is I could feel in her presence that she knew how to stop. But that's what let her hold a space for me in that situation and for so many others. And when they took me to the hospital, and when they heard that I was going to be released, they waited the hour and a half, the ambulance crew, so they could give me a ride back to the retreat center. And that doesn't happen in Washington, D.C. So what I want to share to you is I just got a card from them. This is from the ambulance crew. Really nice card. And they said, this is what it says. It says, service. And the high road to service is traveled with compassion and understanding. People don't care how much we know until they know how much we care. People don't care how much we know until they know how much we care. We're all so commonly trying to accumulate, you know, for ourselves knowledge or information or goods or status. And it's when we pause that we start arriving at that place of caring and presence that's really what we value and what others value. So this is really the gift of the Dharma, the path, this training in how to step out of the busyness and really come home to that which is sacred, to presence, to love, to awareness. So as a way of closing, if you will, just to close your eyes for a moment. And see, what I know you've been sitting for a long time, so just see if you can, for one final time this evening, really give yourself permission to pause and to let go of ideas and thoughts, preoccupations. These are the words of Hafiz that is kind of offers this invitation. He says, just sit there right now. Just sit there right now. Don't do a thing. Just rest. For your separation from God is the hardest work in this world. For your separation from God is the hardest work in this world. Just sit there right now. Don't do a thing. Just rest. Let me bring you trays of food and something that you like to drink. You can use my soft words as a cushion for your head. Just sit there right now. Don't do a thing. Just rest. May all beings discover the blessings of presence, of quieting, of opening, of resting in the love and the awareness that's our true nature. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.